throws the home run to Estrada. Run clock, 2-1, layup good, 1.9 to go, Tigers inbound it, clock hits 0, and let's get out of here and go to the Final Four.
Welcome in, everyone, to another episode of the Double Dribble Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Harper, head basketball analyst of Tide Illustrated of the Rivals Network. You can find me on Twitter at HarperNation24, but enough about me. The Alabama Crimson Tide, your Alabama Crimson Tide, is heading to their first ever Final Four. Alabama defeats Clemson 89-82 in the Elite Eight tonight. Technically, yesterday, I'm sitting up at 12:30 in the morning Central Time recording this. I'm not going to be able to sleep for a while, so I'm just excited to be able to do this episode and to kind of walk through this game with you all, preview the UConn matchup, and it is just unreal. I wanted to say so much after it happened. All I could do is yell. And nothing else really, I really couldn't say anything else. It is just something that, as an Alabama fan, primarily Alabama basketball fan, for the last 25 plus years from when I went to Alabama basketball camps growing up, is always envisioning Alabama to make the Final Four. That's something that I never thought Alabama would be able to do. Ever since I sat up and watched the 2004 Elite Eight team, which everybody knew didn't have a chance against Emeka Okafor, Ben Gordon, Josh Boone, all those guys at UConn, and they got annihilated. And it may happen again this time, but the fact that Alabama made the Final Four and is going to get to play UConn in the Final Four, I keep saying it, and I will keep saying it, because the more I say it, the more it feels real to me, because it still really doesn't at this time. What a game this was against Clemson, a game that looked kind of bleak early on, where Alabama fell down 26-13 with just under 8 minutes left. Jack Clark just made that three-pointer right before the eight-minute timeout, and it just had the feel of another game where Clemson, while they were giving up wide open threes, the other team just wasn't hitting them. And in this case, it was Alabama. And Alabama was one of the best three-point shooting teams in the country, along with Baylor, along with Arizona, who shot poorly from three against Clemson as well. But Alabama just has a different feel about them than those other two teams. They have multiple guys from that play multiple positions that can hit the three. You had guys like Jaren Stevenson really step up with 19 points, making 5 three-pointers on the day. We'll touch on him. We'll touch on all the individual performances here in a second. But starting out, it looked really bleak. First 12 minutes, Alabama had 13 points. Now fast forward until when Alabama finally took the lead 29-28 and ended up being up 33-28 with just under 2 minutes left. 33-28. That's a 20-2 run. 20-2 run in 7 minutes, where Alabama's defense really held Clemson at bay, and the three started falling for Jaren Stevenson. While Mark Sears couldn't get going, there was a time in the first half where Jaren Stevenson had 10 points, and he had the same amount of points as Mark Sears, Aaron Estrada, and Rylan Griffin all combined. Give freshman, should be in high school right now, going to his senior prom, Jaren Stevenson, a lot of credit for stepping up on the biggest stage of his life and playing probably the best game of his life. You have to have guys like this step up on a tournament run. You had Grant Nelson step up last game against North Carolina, who has been really struggling this tournament and has been for most of the year. And then you had Jaren Stevenson, who averages like 5 or 6 points a game, shooting right under 30% from three. But you know, if he gets the shot from the corner, that's his favorite spot. I don't know the exact statistics on where he shoots or what he shoots from each spot on the court, but I guarantee it's right around 40% from the corner. He just seems to feel so comfortable hitting that shot. And that's kind of what Nate Oates' offense is designed to do. It's to put shooters in each corner, have a ball-dominant guard up top, which is typically Mark Sears or Aaron Estrada, and then a big play and pick and roll up top, forcing those guys to come off those shooters in the corner, and then it makes an easy kick-out pass for an in-rhythm three. That's why it's so hard to guard Alabama in any facet of the game, because they just spread you out and make you guard in open space. And Clemson is not a great defensive team. They're decent to solid, but we've seen all tournament that the law of averages, I tweeted this out earlier today or earlier before the game and the day before, that the law of averages is going to catch up to Clemson. You can't keep getting lucky like that to where the teams are just missing wide open threes. Good three-point shooting teams missing wide open threes. It's going to catch up to you. And it certainly did for Alabama, where they went from the first half of being up by three, only scoring 35 points and being up by three is remarkable for this team when you know about their defensive struggles throughout the season. But then they kind of kicked it into gear and scored 54 points and outscored them 54-50 in the second half to pull away from to a seven-point victory. Incredible. Incredible. Let's hop into the stats, what we do on this podcast. If you're new to listening here, we give you kind of a breakdown, a lay of the land of the game, go into the team stats, kind of see where the separation was for the winning team. In today's regard, it's Alabama. So we're going to kind of see where Alabama won majority of the spots, and because stats never lie. You're going to be able to kind of tell from the statistics on what Alabama did right. And it's going to be clear to see once I get down there. But Alabama and Clemson pretty much shot even from the floor, 47 and 46% respectively. And obviously the main difference was Alabama's 16 three-pointers. I believe they shot like 15 of 25 after that slow start from three. I think they were like 1 of 11, 1 of 10 from 3 to start out the game. But it just incredible, incredible shooting gallery Alabama turned out to be in this game. They doubled up Clemson in the three-point department, 16 to 8. I mean, that's 24 points right there. And that's kind of why Alabama and Nate Oates' system is not live by the three, die by the three. But it's taking enough threes to where you get a healthy balance of being able to get that extra point when you start making those, rather than take, you know, a foot or two inside the arc and make a lot tougher analytical shot where you're only getting 2 points, but you're basically right there at the three-point line. So that's why he does it, and it works so well. And obviously, if Alabama's on shooting the threes, you're pretty much toast. You're going to have to hit three for three with them. And not a lot of teams can do that. But overall, Alabama was only 13 of 26, so 50% from two. They missed a lot of layups in this game. I believe I counted seven in the first half. I didn't keep track in the second because they mainly shot threes in the second half. But Seven missed layups, in the first half was incredible. I mean, so many easy bunnies that they were just missing. And that game could have been a double-digit game at halftime if it wasn't for those missed layups. I mean, not all layups are easy. I mean, you got big guys up there contesting. But for Alabama, these guys make these layups in their sleep majority of the games. But they just could not buy a basket early on, and that's kind of why they only had 13 points 12 minutes into the game. But give Alabama credit, they kept attacking. Nick Pringle had a fantastic game inside. But I thought the high pick and roll for Alabama on the empty side, where there wasn't a shooter on that side, was really, really beneficial for them spacing-wise. And they were just putting P.J. Hall in very tough situations, who ended up fouling out with about 5 or 6 minutes to go, which was huge for Alabama down the stretch. but just put their bigs in really tough situations guarding wise. And that left the slip of Nick Pringle open so many times at the goal. And you saw that time after time after time. And if they hedge too much or help too much to hit the roller, Sears or Estrada were finding the wide open three man. And a lot of the times it was Sears that was wide open. I mean, you had Sears hitting shots from the logo. I mean, no conscience. Dude was in a zone. Muscle Shoals, pride of Muscle Shoals, stand up. I mean, just incredible shooting performance from Mark Sears. Both teams were very surprisingly poor from free throw. Clemson is, I believe, a top 15 free throw shooting team in the country percentage-wise, and they were 8 of 16. While Alabama is top 30, 35-ish, and they were 15 of 22. A lot of nerves, I'm sure, and a lot of it has to do with the people that were at the line. Like, you had guys like Nick Pringle that went to the line 13 times, made 8 of them. But you had Shefflin that was 4 of 8 from free throw. So a lot of times it's just about who goes to the free throw line. And the right guys for both teams went to the free throw line, and they missed a lot. So it left a lot on the table or out there points-wise for that team. But I think the game was won and lost on the boards. On the boards. I definitely think that, just because Alabama was 44-33 on the board, 16-12 in offensive rebounds. And it wasn't even close offensive rebound-wise in the first half. I believe Alabama was up like 7-1 in the first half offensively. And they were just dominating the boards. Clemson is not a very athletic team in the front court. They're not athletic in the back court. Alabama definitely had the athletic edge. So you thought that, you know, in the past few games where Grant and C would have the big advantage on the boards, but the one team that dominated Alabama on the boards in the tournament was College of Charleston, and they're the least athletic team that they've played. A lot about rebounding is about effort and position, and give Alabama a lot of credit. They really fought to get positioned, to get offensive boards. Nick Pringle had an offensive board late in the second half that was an and-one play. It was actually the play that P.J. Hall fouled out on when he kind of hooked his arm, where Nick Pringle was up at the top of the key. And when the shot went up, Nick Pringle ran from the top of the key, hedged in between P.J. Hall and I think it was Shefflin to get in position for an offensive rebound. It came right to him, and he tipped it up and got an and-one and made the free throw. And that pushed Alabama's lead back up to, I believe, 5 or 6 in a time where Alabama desperately needed it. So rebounding was the big key, I feel like. Obviously, you can point at the threes made as the big differential points-wise, but a lot of what Alabama was doing was because of offensive rebounds. They got a lot of second-chance points. It was a fairly clean game turnover-wise. Alabama got sloppy in the second half, ended up with 13 turnovers, about one above their average. But neither team really took advantage off turnovers. 8-5 points off turnovers. Clemson had the edge there. And Clemson definitely had the edge in points in the paint, 44-26. So he had over half of Clemson's points came from the paint. So overall, from Clemson, you had 52 of the 82 points came from the free throw line and in the paint. So just not very effective from three, and you got to be from three if you're going to beat Alabama. And Alabama was gladly trading twos for threes, and that's ultimately what ended up being the difference, is Alabama getting hot from three and Clemson just really couldn't. So let's just hop into the box score, see all the individual performances. Mark Sears led Alabama with 23 points, 7 of 14 shooting. All 7 threes that he made came in the second half. Just an incredible, incredible second half performance. One for the ages, one from the tournament history, I'm sure, in terms of 3-pointers and a half, especially in an Elite Eight game. But he ended up 8 of 18 overall, 7 of those coming from 3. Not enough can be said about Mark Sears, who I think could be pushing his name into the NBA draft conversation, where I thought that it was a long shot to begin with during the season. Brunson, and that is a fair comparison, size-wise, ability to make shots, just really crafty, big body guard, even though he's not doesn't have a lot of height. But Mark Sears has been a guy that's just carried this team countless times. And when he struggled tonight, or technically this, we'll just say again, the game against Clemson and maybe the game against UNC, he wasn't great. But he has teammates that were like, okay, Mark, you got us all year. We're going to get you now until you can heat up, because you know he's going to figure it out as the game goes on. And that guy this tonight was Jaren Stevenson. I mean, he was a guy that kind of picked up Mark Sears in Alabama throughout the game, who finished with 19 points. He was 5 of 8 shooting from 3, 7 of 11 overall. Just, he had 2 blocks as well. I mean, he was just doing it all. I believe he led Alabama in plus-minus for majority of that game. And not enough can be said about the freshman who early enrolled, hit a freshman wall pretty early in the season and just really couldn't get past it. He'd have games where he'd show up here and there shooting-wise, but guy that you can only play 10, 15 minutes in a game. He comes up big in the biggest game in Alabama basketball history. You cannot write a script better than NCAA March Madness. I mean, there's just nothing like it. Kind of looking down, Nick Pringle, 16 points, 11 rebounds. He was great defensively, I thought, on PJ Hall. Really flustered him and frustrated him. Similar to what he did to Armando Bacot as well. Bacot finished 8 of 18 from the field, and P.J. Hall finished 6 of 14. Not an efficient night from him. He was hitting some tough shots, too. He kind of got what he wanted early on, 3 straight field goals that were pretty easy, but not a lot came easy after that for P.J. Hall outside of a dunk that he made in the second half. But Nick Pringle, give him a lot of credit. He was 8 of 13 from the line. Might not sound great, but when you look at him shoot the free throws and where he's come from when he first got to Alabama, huge free throws down the stretch. Huge. Rylan Griffin, I thought, played another fantastic game. This time, it wasn't all about his three-point shooting. Yes, he finished 3 of 6 overall, 13 points. But it was his distributing. I thought it was very underrated. This game for him, I mean, he was finding open guy after open guy, and those open guys typically ended up being Mark Sears. You have to respect Ryland's shot, so the guys have to kind of hug up on him at the three-point line. That allows him to drive, and he's a good enough ball handler to where he can penetrate the lane, and guys just continue to come off of Mark Sears off the three-point line. I'll never understand it. Just, if I was a defense, I'd stay hugged up on him and make other guys shoot from three. But Rylan Griffin had 6 assists, 4 rebounds, 13 total points. Aaron Estrada did not have an efficient game shooting. He missed majority of the layups that I mentioned before, the 7. I would say he probably missed 3 or 4 early in the game. But he had 10 points. He had a huge 3 on a fast break. I mean, he ended up with 10, 8, and 7, 8 rebounds, 7 assists. Another one of his stat padding games. And kind of already went over Jaren Stevenson, 19 points. Alabama had 19 bench points, and they all came from Jaren Stevenson. There were only 2 other guys that took a shot, a singular shot, and that was Wagee and Sam Walters, and they both missed. But, I mean, it was pretty much a 6-man wrecking crew. With Grant Nelson kind of tagging up the rear with 8 points, along with 2 blocks, 7 rebounds. He kind of got in foul trouble early on with 2 quick fouls early in the game. And he ended up finishing with 4, which was huge because you knew that he was going to come back in the first half, and you just didn't want him to pick up another cheapie to make it 3 or 4 and having to play the rest of the game on the bench. Kind of just glossing over Clemson, who I thought played a really good game, probably one of their better games they've played this tournament. It's just Alabama played better. Alabama was the first team to outplay them in this tournament. You had Joe Girard, 19 points, 5 of 10 shooting from 3. He hit some ridiculous threes, one to cut it, the lead to three late in the second half, which looked like he just barely touched. He just barely got it to his hand and flicked it up there and drained it. But, yeah, Chase Hunter had 12. P.J. Hall finished with 14. Ian Shefflin had another great game against Alabama. He was relied on down the stretch with P.J. Hall out, and he scored some big buckets, finished with 18 and 11. But P.J. Hall's five turnovers, P.J. had five of the eight turnovers Clemson had, so I think that sticks out the most. Both centers, Grant and P.J., both had five turnovers in the game. So some great down-low defense going on in this game, and that's kind of why the game was dominated by guards and outside shooting overall. Whew, that was a lot. Okay. Alabama advances to their first ever Final Four. Yes, the first ever Final Four. I don't think I'll be able to stop saying that to people when I see them out, when I see my family. I know my wife's already tired of hearing me say Alabama's going to the Final Four. It's just an unreal moment in my life. I'm sure your life that's listening, it's something that we've all waited for patiently as Alabama basketball fans for a long time. Now, next order of business for Alabama is going to be to face the buzzsaw that is the Connecticut Huskies. Now, UConn is obviously far and away the best team in the country, far and away. They just defeated Illinois, 3-seed Illinois, who is a really, really solid team overall, number 10 in KenPom, and the number 4 overall adjusted offense in the country. Beat them 77-52. Wasn't even really that close, to be honest. They started, UConn started the half, second half, on a 30-0 run. 30-0 run. I mean, you just don't know what to say after a while. You know, they obviously have the 7-2 freak, Donovan Klingon, down low. He finished with 22-10 and 5 blocks, 3 steals. He's just a defensive menace in the lane. They didn't even need Tristan Newton, who was probably their best player, didn't even hit a shot, finished with 5 points. And then Cam Spencer and Alex Caravan, who's a very talented forward as well, finished with 10 and 11 apiece. But I mean, you had Illinois that was scared to go inside against Klingon, rightfully so. UConn only shot 3 of 17 from 3, but they shot 28 of 43 from inside. It was more of a defensive masterpiece than it was an offensive for UConn. UConn is a really, really good offensive team, number one adjusted offensive team in the country. Alabama is not far behind them, as well as Purdue, but they're also a top 5 adjusted defensive team in the country. But I will say, I'm not going to say that I think that Alabama will beat UConn. I'm not going to go on a limb there. UConn has been absolutely dominant in the NCAA tournament. But I will say, UConn has gotten very, very comfortable of facing teams in the Northeast. They haven't had to travel much at all. When it comes to going on road games or neutral site games. They're going to have to travel all the way to Phoenix, Arizona for the Final Four. Not saying that's a huge problem for them, but it is basically going to be a long-distance road game, as it will be for Alabama. But Alabama's played a lot of tough road games already against tough teams and played them really close. The one that kind of comes to my mind that Alabama's played that would be the most comparable to UConn was against Purdue, where they lost 92-86. Now, that was a game where Alabama just got absolutely on fire from three. Mark Sears especially got 35 points, hit 19 threes. But Zach Edey had 35 points on 12 of 20 shooting. Now, Klingon's not as dominant offensively as Zach Edey is. He's a better defender than Edey is, in my opinion. He can kind of guard out a little bit better. But this is a game where if Alabama can hit threes, they're going to have to hit 15 or more, no doubt. Going to have to hit 15 or more. And Purdue was plus 15 at the free throw line that day too. But it goes to show that both teams are similar in a way that they have one dominant big and they got some shooters around them. Now, I think Purdue has better shooters around their big than UConn does, pure shooters. But one game I wanted to bring up as well was UConn had to travel to Creighton, which is in Nebraska. And UConn lost that game 85-66. Creighton plays very, very similarly to Alabama. Creighton plays, had the number 9 adjusted offense in the country. Now, obviously, they're better defensively. And Alabama plays a lot faster than Creighton. But Creighton is another team that likes to get everything at the rim or from three. And this was a game that Donovan Klingon really struggled because he struggles to play out in space. Now, him and Ryan Kaltbrenner, is a great matchup, and they both kind of cancel each other out. But my point being is if you can get Klingon and Caravan guarding the perimeter, spread them out like Alabama likes to do, put them in pick-and-roll situations out in space, Alabama's guards are quick enough and good enough to be able to expose them and get them to the rim. Now, one thing that I will mention that they might end up doing will be like against Arizona. Arizona sagged off Grant Nelson and let him shoot 15 plus threes. And that was kind of the undoing of Alabama that game. They could sag off. They could play drop coverage on those pick and rolls. You're really playing a dangerous game there, especially if it's against Mark Sears or Rylan Griffin or Latrell Reitzel, who I think will be back for the game against UConn, because you're going to leave them open for threes all day long. So they really can't play drop coverage effectively and guard the three. So it's going to be an interesting chess match. You know, Dan Hurley, Nate Oates go way back to being on Dan's father's staff, and they know each other really well. Preston Murphy also coached under Hurley at Rhode Island. So there's a lot of familiarity here coaching-wise. Not many common opponents to kind of look at outside of maybe Creighton. Alabama and Connecticut played North Carolina as well, beat them 87-76 back in the non-conference. But outside of both of those, very unfamiliar with each other. They did play last year, totally different teams. I feel like this team is a better quote-unquote team than last year's with Brandon Miller, just because these guys play a lot better together and the ball doesn't stick near as much offensively. So is there a chance against UConn? Yes, there is. Alabama opened at an 11-point underdog to UConn, which is about what I thought. I thought it might be about 10.5. But Alabama's going to be a big underdog. Everybody's going to pick UConn. Alabama has nothing to lose. They're playing with house money at this point. All the pressure's on UConn. So Alabama's going to come out and they're going to let it fly. And however it plays out is how it plays out. I hate to be the guy to say it, but just glad to be there. What a podcast. What a night. I hope everyone enjoyed watching Alabama make the Final Four. I'm still speechless about what to say about it, but I appreciate everyone listening to this episode of the Double Dribble Podcast, a historic episode, one that I'll come back and listen to multiple times in the future, I'm sure, and I hope you do as well. But I thank you for listening to another episode of the Double Dribble Podcast. Please subscribe on whatever platform you listen on. I'm your host, Jordan Harper, head basketball analyst of Tide Illustrated of the Rivals Network, and you can find me on Twitter at HarperNation24. And I will be back recording after the Final Four game against UConn next week. And until next time, everyone have a happy Easter and a happy weekend. Adios.